another episode of Cord Cutters. It's Mick Jost with Cinema Blend. And if the intro was not Wolves by Kanye West, that means Gabe didn't get the rights to it, which is a shame because that's what got me into Ozark in the first place. We're going to get into talking about this awesome show. Obviously, I'm already spoiling my thoughts on it, but let's get into introducing everybody first. Of course, as always, we got Miss Adrian Jones. What's going on, Adrian?
Not much. Just ready to talk about the show. Hey, everybody.
And joining us for the second week in a row, he's super jazzed to be on a traditional episode, and he won't have to cut out super early this time. Head television editor for Cinema Blend, and the first of his name, Nick Venable.
Hey,
hello.
Nick.
Hello.
I got your title right that time. Did I?
This week, though, the part of Nick Venable will be played by Jason Bateman.
Ooh. That's something to look forward
it
to.
It wasn't. That was my
You just pulled Arrested Development move there?
Yeah. Sorry.
That's actually awesome because that's part of our game we're going to do later. But before we get into the game, let's talk about Ozark. Let's just get a feel of where everybody's at with it. Adrian, let's kick things off. How great was Ozark?
I liked it.
You liked it?
Yeah, I liked it. It's, you know, not necessarily the best thing I've ever seen or whatever, but it's a solid crime show. Yeah.
Okay. Nick, how are you feeling about it?
I loved it.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. No complaints?
It wasn't the best thing I've ever seen, but it's as intricate crime storytelling as you can find on TV these days without everything falling into stereotypes there's some stereotypes, mind you, but
oh yeah,
without it just falling
there are
into
definitely some stereotypes.
All right, you guys will have to sway me because I'm fanboying pretty hard about this show. Before we get into all the spoiler stuff, let's just talk about characters. For people who want to jump into this series, obviously this will be a shorter podcast for you today where you can watch and come back, but just to give you like a tease of what to look out for, give me your best performance of the show. Who do you think was the real, like, shining star of this series, and why? We'll start with Nick.
You gotta give it to my alter ego, Jason Bateman, because he pulls off everything with an exquisite amount of drama and with that dark comedy just layered right beneath it to where it's like, even as audience members, you know he's bullshitting everyone in the show, but you still want to believe him because he's saying it so nicely and he's so convincing. So that to me made him, you know, more to I don't know, draw comparisons to Breaking Bad. Like, he initially came off as more of the everyman than Walter White did, in that he doesn't have an ego driving his every move. He's just worried about surviving. So that's what I dug that.
Yeah. For sure. And I feel like, for me, because I enjoyed Jason Bateman, if you would have, when I first saw the trailer for this show, that was like the number one thing in my head. I was like, okay, it looks cool, but can Jason Bateman pull off doing something like this? And I'm thinking back to like, he did that weird spelling bee comedy, kind of dark movie, Bad Words, I believe it was called.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, everyone knows
about
from Arrested Development, but, you know, I didn't, and Horrible Bosses, you know, he's more of a comedy guy. So, like, part of me in the back of my head, I was like, is this going to be Jason Bateman trying and failing to come off as a dramatic actor? But he managed to do it, like, in his own way, but still succeed, like, very well.
Yeah, he's still very Jason Bateman-y. Like, you can definitely recognize, it's not like he did a complete transformation or something. You can definitely recognize that that's him. Like Nick said, it's still kind of the same. The performance is in sort of the same vein as other performances he's given in comedies, but he managed to layer it with just enough, I don't even know what the right word is, just enough drama, I guess.
Back sweat, I think is what.
Yeah, yeah. To make it work in this really heightened, dramatic situation. And plus, I liked his performance as well, but before I give who I think is the breakout of the show, I want to know what you guys thought about Jason Bateman's character, Marty, who's laundering money for a Mexican cartel. Do you think, because it, throughout the series, now I've only watched five episodes, but throughout those episodes,
shame,
I know, the character is very willing to just come right out and say what needs to be said, even if he's facing down like some really scary people. And do you guys think he's braver than it appears from just looking at him that he is? Or do you think he's just dead inside? Because I think he's just so, I honestly think he's, the character is so dead inside that he really doesn't care. He almost doesn't care what he says to who. Like if he feels that thing needs to be said, he'll just come right out with it, as opposed to being brave and thinking this needs to be done. What do you guys think is the division there?
I think that that's a really great question. I wish I had thought of it, but beyond that, I think it's more of in his personality. I think it's, he's a direct person. He's an analytical mind. He's a crunch the numbers kind of guy. I have an uncle who hopefully won't listen to this podcast, who's very much a dry, you know, just kind of guy. Doesn't have a huge sense of humor. And that's kind of the vibe I got from Marty Bird, was it was just, he's always thinking about what's logical. He's always trying to go with what's the logical plan.
Yeah.
And it works for him for the most part until, of course, he makes the bluff, which this is still a non-spoiler territory, so I can't get too far into it, but he makes the bluff that he can wash all this money in the Ozarks, just kind of has this bullshit plan that comes out of nowhere and then has to actually make it happen. And I think that's when his character starts to not necessarily break down, but it definitely throws more flaws into how he operates when he's under that.
What do you think, Nick? Do you think he's brave or just dead inside?
I don't. There has to be a certain amount of bravery, because just standing there talking to Isai Morales would be kind of intimidating for anyone. But it's I don't think he's dead inside, because they, even the fractured-ish relationship between him and Wendy, there's still so much attention paid to the kids. Like, they really drive home the, you know, these parents love these kids and they aren't just there as
Wendy is his wife, by the way.
The episode.
Yeah.
His wife,
for those who don't know.
And so, yeah, I also don't think that he's dead inside, but I do think that his appreciation for adults has certainly, it wears away as the story goes on. And so there is a point where you do start to wonder if there's anything in it for Marty at this point.
Yeah.
So you went into that, but did you actually have somebody different as your breakout performance, Adrian?
Yeah, I like Julia Garner, who plays Ruth.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, Ruth Langmore.
She is was just so unexpected as the leader of this family of criminals, you know, low-level criminals who are trying to, you know, her dad apparently is in prison. He was the former leader of this criminal family. And now she seems to be like the most motivated, smartest one, who is trying to keep their criminal enterprises going and is using legitimate jobs to further their criminal work. She's smart. She's way more ruthless than you think she'd be. And I just loved her. Like, I just really love that character.
I agree. I like the perm too. I was a big fan of the perm. Like, those were some tight curls. Every time I saw it, it's just one of those things that, like, it drew my attention every time. But
Jason Bateman looks like he just woke up from the couch with his hair. So.
Right. For sure.
I love how Ruth, even though she, again, plays into some stereotypes of, I guess, backwoods folks, like
white trash. Can we say white trash? Let's just call it what it is.
That could get you shot, Mick.
Yeah, that's true. Fair.
It makes everybody look not great, but it's always good to not just have the Southern hillbillies as like the, you know, generic trope bad guys. That that there is, you know, an arc to be found within that family. So yeah, I give it to her. I liked I like that whole family in a way that I would not want to watch a show based just on them.
Yeah.
But they were a delightfully confused plot mechanic, I guess, for Marty to have to wade through.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One person I do want to pick, and while we're talking about complexity, because the show really does have, they really do make their characters kind of complex, and everybody has their own little story going on. I can't remember. Jason Butler Harner is the actor playing the special FBI agent Roy. Dude, yeah. That guy's a piece of work. Like, every scene with him, I was like, this dude is nuts. And the whole time, I was just wowed by the stuff he would do. And it was so well, like, he pulled out the performance so well that, like, he gets you believing that he's, like, genuine in the stuff he's doing. And then only for him to turn around and do something crazy, and you're like, oh, no, it turns out he's just as crazy as we thought he was.
And he's just like Marty in that he will, I guess, convince himself that he's doing whatever it takes for the greater good. But some of it is just him just doing whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Which is all for the sure. more disturbing, considering the things that he does.
I was interested in, okay, the FBI agent, why when he was starting to bond on that fishing trip with whichever of the Langmores
hang on, let me throw the spoiler tag.
Okay.
I feel like we gotta get into it now, so spoiler alert, turn off the podcast, or at least just pause it, then go watch all 9 episodes.
They were
and then
dead
come immediately
the whole
back.
Time.
And listen, okay, Adrian, come back.
Okay, so the FBI agent, since Marty and his family have moved to the Ozarks from Chicago to try to launder $5 million, is it
eight million
to try to launder $8 million for this Mexican cartel? He's moved down there as well and is undercover and is starting to form a bond with one of the low-level criminals in the Langmore family. I think one of Ruth's uncles. Is that correct?
Yes.
Russ.
And
is it
he
Russ
pays
boy?
The guy to take him. He pays the guy to take him fishing, and they're starting to bond. And then toward the end of that, the FBI agent mentions that he's gay, which is, you know, not just a story. The FBI agent really is gay. And I was wondering, he was building, doing a pretty good job of building this bond with this guy. And why would he throw something in that would, you know,
potentially hurt his relationship?
Yeah, potentially hurt his relationship. Of course, we find out later on it does not hurt his relationship with this guy.
Hurts
Is it
so
just,
good.
Yeah. Is it just that he had a sense that this was going to end up working with him? Or was he trying to play some other angle that I just don't know about yet?
It was some angle you just don't know about yet.
For anybody who hadn't heard Adrienne say that she only watched up until episode 5, that was your proof.
Yeah, actually plays into me talking about how we realize Roy is like just as insane. Because like I swear, like right up until the reveal that he's just playing like a long game with the Langmore, you kind of can, you're like, all right, he's trying to make it work with this guy. He's trying to keep him out of trouble, but he's also trying to capture Marty Bird. Then you're like, no, it was all just a ploy. He's trying to implicate this dude in a murder so that he'll try to get Ruth to get Marty. All that kind of, it's like twisted and draws back to the ex-lover saying like, you are really a sociopath, aren't you? Kind of deal. And you're like, whoa.
As well, yeah, Roy had... he found out information that Russ had gone to jail for trying to pick up a male prostitute years previous. So he had
that
he already had
intel
the tip
that he was a closeted, not even a closeted homophobe. He was a very out in the open homophobe.
He was an outward homophobe, but a closeted homosexual. Yeah. he had it flipped around. It was a shame. I was really hoping they were going to get that lure store off the ground. But no such luck.
The great American dream right there.
And that kind of draws into the next thing I want to talk about. There's a lot of moving parts to the series and sub-stories that go within the larger story of Marty trying to find his way out of this impossible situation. Knowing that, I guess, Nick, since you watched the full first season, Which character or storyline are you excited to learn more about or see more of in season two?
The way everything ended with with the Snells, with Jacob Snell. And I have to see how him and Morty end up, you know, working together moving forward in season two, since he's kind of like the, I really don't give a shit because things are just gonna go my way, and I like that attitude more than the cartels do what I say, I'm gonna threaten everyone, because we've seen that.
Well, and Del kind of put you kind of get the sense near the end that Del was intentionally putting Marty in an impossible situation. He was like, when they finally wash the 8 million and they're in the clear, and they show up literally like a week later with $100 million. Like, you get the sense that he's like, I dare you to do it again. Like, I'm going to make your life hell trying to do this, or I'm going to kill you. Like, yeah. It was kind of like Marty was screwed either way at that point. So I think with the Snells, where there's no rhyme or reason to them. They're just kind of crazy. And I think like you kind of get the sense at the end of the season, you're like, damn, I thought the cartel was bad, but now he's dealing with like heroin dealing rednecks who are just like unpredictable. You're like,
wait a minute. They're hillbillies.
Don't call them hillbillies.
I thought that was the distinction.
Right. You don't call them rednecks.
They are hillbillies. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because they live on the hill.
You call them when you need heroin, I think is what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to know more about Wyatt's character, Wyatt Langmore. He was one of those people that, obviously, like Ruth, he was kind of a different from the Langmores, where he was well-read, he seemed educated, and then near the end, when you had the death of Russ and Boyd, he kind of had this, not necessarily, he's like coping with it in some way, but near the end, you kind of get the tease that, like, he might be doing something himself, like, he's starting to put the pieces together in his mind, and that he could be working towards something later on in the series, which I believe we posted on CinemaBlend. They're planning like 4 or 5 seasons for this series overall. Was that right?
Yeah,
Nick?
I think that's sort of, they sort of have that scope planned out, even though, you know, depending on how it goes with Netflix, that can be altered and, or widened, that's, I guess. True. But yeah, I think he says no more than 5 seasons.
Which sounds absolutely insane considering the ending.
Yeah.
Like, how they just, that you're feels like a season things four go ending. Beyond that much longer. It's by
well,
the
here's
way,
the thing, though,
Adrian,
you can always have somebody come in. There's always another criminal enterprise somewhere that could come in and kind of force Marty to do their bidding, I'm assuming. So him laundering money, he could do that for several different organizations over the course of the show.
It's an anthology series now. Marty's going launder that money again.
Yeah.
Now he's doing it for a crazy millionaire in a New York penthouse.
I kind of was curious. I wasn't able to find anything about it, but I do kind of wonder if they just kind of pulled this out of their ass, or they did some like real like washing money, like laundering, just kind of like they had some inspiration to where like this guy did it. Because it seems like such an odd idea to, like, a guy moves out to the Ozarks and starts washing dirty money for a cartel dealer. It almost seemed like a little too on the nose. Like, is there some real Marty Bird out there?
Well, there probably is. But I do know that I think the guy who created the series is from St. Louis and used to work in the Ozarks when he was, I think, in college or something like that. Okay. So he's got
the Redneck Riviera, as they call
yeah.
it.
Yeah, he's got recently. Background just from being in the area when he was younger.
It's kind of insane. Did you like just from people who watch the show? Because I feel like they don't really show the scope of it. But in that summer season, the Lake of the Ozarks area sees over 5 million tourists in that time period. Like that is an like they aren't kidding when there's like an insane economic boom between that time and then the town's like literally dead. Like all the rest of the time. That's a lot of people.
I know it did. Yeah, it is. It did never feel like he never went to like the bar or a store or something and it's just like, you know, I don't think he ever
there was always like a decent crowd. But yeah, no, it was like maybe like 30 to 40 people versus like 3 people. Like 5 million people, man. That is an insane. I mean, obviously it's spread out. The Lake of the Ozarks is large, I'm assuming, but it's a lot of people.
Massive, but still.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying, where they didn't really show us the full scope of what it's like down there during the tourist season. But I think there was just so much going on that the main characters are kind of stuck in like their specific locations. So there's not a lot of going out and doing a lot of other stuff, right? Because, you know, you're worrying about laundering money.
Gotta wash $8 million in like
months. Yeah. There's like too much going on to really like do any kind of enjoying of the setting or whatever. So we never really see the full picture of what's happening down there.
Was there anything that annoyed you guys about this series? Like we're talking about obviously the realism. You know, they're not going to shove 5 million extras into the Lake of the Ozarks. But like in terms of reality, because I feel like Breaking Bad. Because we're going to make this comparison a lot. Breaking Bad, Ozarks, which, by the way, they're not as similar as you would think. Or at least to me, it didn't feel... Did you guys feel any differently? Did you feel like this show's trying to be Breaking Bad? I kind of got the vibe that I was like, this show is actively trying to be different than Breaking Bad while still being Breaking Bad.
I've only seen the first episode of Breaking Bad, so I can't... I don't have a clear comment on that.
Adrian.
I can't watch everything.
Who is this? I can't watch everything.
I know. I'll just avoid the best show on TV ever.
I can't be asked to watch one of the best television series of all time. You gotta watch it.
I can't wear everything, so I guess I'll just wear sandpaper and nails, I guess.
I've seen The Wire all the way through twice, so there you go. To me, The Wire is one of the best crime series ever created. So.
You gotta watch Breaking Bad, then. I mean, it's hard to put The Wire up against Breaking Bad. We're not talking about that. We're talking about Ozark. Nick, you've watched Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah, and I think had Ozark like shown us more of the cartel work along with everything else, then it might have felt more like The Wire and showing like every community rather than just the ones centered where the crimes are happening. But but agreed, like it did feel like Breaking Bad in that it was, you know, a family at the center of a burgeoning criminal empire, I guess. Rather than just a sole man brought up for one last job or something.
Right.
But yeah, other than that, it kind of... it really all is in the motivations of Marty and Walt, where Walt wanted to be the guy, and Marty just wanted to make the guy happy enough to
wanted to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it...
I also like the fact that the family was brought in almost immediately into the series. Which, for me, with Breaking Bad, that was always my thing that hung me up on. Because even, like, in the beginning when Skyler doesn't know, you're like, okay, she's going to figure this out eventually, right? And then you're kind of spending more time waiting for that to happen than you are. It wasn't like Marty, like, oh, we're living in the Ozarks, everything's normal. Let me just go buy these random properties out of the blue.
Now, no, it wasn't
completely...
If you don't
have a job, it's really hard to fake just, I went out for... water, I guess. So.
Yeah. To me, it wasn't completely clear. I feel like the show didn't make it completely clear at the beginning when he first has to get the family out of town, whether or not his wife knew all or most of the time that he was laundering money that this was going on. I think she did, but I feel like the show didn't really completely spell it out. What do you guys think? Do you think she knew most of the time that he's been laundering money?
I don't think she... that's a good question because that wasn't really clear to me. I was like, did she know he was taking money off the top? Or... Because they were both... And I'm not actually sure that it was Marty actually taking the money, was it? It was...
Marty wasn't taking the money. I'm just wondering if... his wife knew that he was laundering money.
Oh yeah, she knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he they are such a good couple that he brought it up to her before.
Yeah. That was one of the weirdest, like most bizarre moments in the series. I'm so glad you brought that up. Where they're sitting there and he's like, we could make a lot of money doing this. And they're like, Should we? Like they're discussing whether or not to like have another child kind of thing. Like it was such an odd but casual conversation. I was like, that's probably how it would go down in reality.
Could we use millions and millions of dollars? Oh, no. I mean, what do you have to...
Yeah.
I mean, on paper, it sounded great. And then I'm sure he regretted it as soon as he said yes when he saw that dude's eyeballs get popped out. Like, I think that was probably one of my highlights of the show, because it was the best, like, part of where, like, Marty, on the heels of thinking he's making the best decision of his life, is, like, almost instantly, like, realize, I just messed up. Like, I just got in with some real people right now. This dude just killed a guy in front of me.
Okay, tell me when this happens. Is this a flashback to how he originally got started doing this?
I believe it's the episode before the finale, is it not?
Okay.
They go back and they do an episode where they kind of follow everyone prior to the whole thing going down. The first time he meets Del and the cartel comes into the business and all that. And they kind of lay it out. And yeah, right as Marty agrees, Del is like, well, I don't need your services anymore. And like this guy with them was like their former accountant who was stealing from him. And they cut the guy's eyes out right in front of Marty and his partner. And it was like...
To bring it back to Breaking Bad, with the doll in the swimming pool with the eyeball hanging out. It's like, we got the foreshadowing of the jar of eyeballs before we got to see the actual eyeball event happen. So that was a nice touch, because that confused me.
That's true. Like, that's true, because I kind of spent, eyeballs? I was like, whose eyeballs did he send? And then they're like, oh yeah, that's like, where those eyeballs came from.
Oh, someone else's eyeballs. I get it now.
I kept them all this time, specifically for this moment.
Yeah. Oh, man, we got to move again, I guess. Get all the books, get all the clothes, and the jar of eyeballs. Don't forget the jar of eyeballs.
Oh, man. It was, I think we started this out somewhere else. Realism, believability. Was there any specific moment in the show where you're like, eh, this is a little... It got a little far-fetched in, like, this area. Like, for me, an example would be, while I loved it and I thought it was hilarious, when the real estate agent's mom got hit by the truck, I'm like, this is just all too convenient. Like, the minute they get everything in check, she gets smacked by a van and killed.
Yeah, that realtor and his mom, that did feel like the most, I don't know, ham-handed, like, network TV sort of thing, because it was just very, like, I don't want to do this because my mom doesn't want to do it. You'll do it now. Okay. And it's just, like, that guy had...
And, like, you just know it's happened. You knew it was coming. You're like, she's backing up into the street for some reason. She's about to get hit by something. And, like, as soon as that one word hit, she's like, "Kuh!" That was me. That was my sound effect of getting... That's what it probably sounds like when you get hit by a truck, right?
To you. I think it's like a
probably hit the brakes a little after. No, maybe they don't. Maybe they just keep going. Never been hit by a truck.
They did not go into the legal ramifications of that truck driver hitting.
Yeah, they should have done a full episode just highlighting that, whether he'd be brought up on charges.
I was thinking about that at the time. Like, he wants, you know, money for the funeral and stuff. He is going to get some kind of a wicked good payment coming from him for that truck hitting that woman, I would believe.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that stood out besides that? Adrian, can you think of anything?
No, not for me. I haven't gotten to anything where I felt like it was completely ridiculous, or just, like Nick was saying, just kind of networky, where it feels like something you'd see just on a, you know, regular TV show.
I don't know I fully got on with the preacher's storyline. Like, I mean, like, the, you know, all of the basic plot machinations itself, I, you know, I understood everything, but him and the kid at the end and the wife, he felt very tertiary for a while, and then you play that scene and I'm like, was this dude, like, super important?
just to bring you up to speed, Adrian, so the Snells, they threaten this preacher guy because he's preaching on the boat.
Yeah.
They're like, they tell Marty at one point, they're like, if you don't get this guy to keep doing his sermons on the river, we're gonna cut his wife's baby out of her stomach. And he's like, well, that's dark. And then, like, later on, the wife, that was an actual quote. I don't know. Like, But anyway, later on, we run into this minister again, and he comes home to an empty house. His wife is presumed missing, and there's their newborn child that they've never had prior to now, just laying there, fully healthy and delivered. Nothing wrong with it. Medically fine. The umbilical cord's cut.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of think about it. I was like, that baby's real. That really turned out well for that baby, considering how it was delivered. Didn't have any, like, postnatal care. Maybe also, they have a doctor.
That baby was laying in the middle of a table. So, like, whoever put it there would have to have, like, been watching from a window until them
to make sure the baby doesn't roll off.
Yeah. Oh, shit, our pristine plan is screwed now.
they just put, like, a little tape underneath the baby to secure its position.
That was so odd, because they hammered us over the head with what happened to the wife, you know, making it very direct what happened to her, but still playing it out as a mystery, sort of, within the show itself. And then I don't understand what happens next with this creature. Like, why?
And yeah, something's got to happen,
Adrian,
right?
Adrian, the final minutes, he's out on the water with the carriage, with the holder, and
kind of a broken man.
Yeah. And you sort
so
of
I'm
get
assuming
the
before
that,
this, I'm assuming before this point that he had said no, he's not going to let them keep distributing their drugs while he's preaching.
Yeah.
Sorry, we had like a lag just there where everybody. Anyway, you tell the story, Nick. One
he goes up to the water and he places the baby under the water, and there's a two-handed hold going down where it's like, holy shit, like, how is
he's
this
gonna kill the baby
end like this? Right. And then picks the baby up. Baby is underwater for, you know, beyond the plausible deniability.
It's a hot minute. Like,
baptism time.
At least 45 seconds. No, it isn't baptism style, because, like, I'm for real thinking, like, I'm just waiting for him to be like, this baby's dead. And he just
let go.
And the baby
walk
just
away.
Flies up fine.
And then, yeah, he picks it up and does sign of the cross on the forehead. It's like, oh, it is a baptism. But that baby, one, should have been blue. Dude just came out not even wet.
Yeah, it was
like when he did the sign of the cross, he was pushing no water aside. I don't know, that was just like a really confusing ending to a plot line that I thought had wrapped itself up.
Yeah, it was kind of trippy. Going back to that, because we're kind of approaching like the finale territory, how did you feel about the finale, first off, in terms of the Snells killing Dell? Right after he lays out this awesome plan, how they're going to have a riverboat casino and they'll be able to move hundreds of millions of dollars on a month. It's flat out amazing plan that the batshit crazy Snails ruin, potentially. They're like, it'll be fine. They'll send another Mexican. That's the Snails' words, not mine. that's what they say, basically. And then Marty, he's like, I got to get my family out of here. They're gone. But then the family returns. And for me, I was like, why? Like, I get the need to keep the family involved in terms of making the story interesting, but for me, I was like really conflicted about the family coming back. I was like, this is not the smart move, having the crime family, especially when things are getting as hot as they are now, leaving your entire family there. I don't know, maybe you felt differently, Nick.
I mean from a sensible standpoint, it's like, yes, I would get the hell out of Dodge as soon as, you know, anyone shows up in my house threatening my kids. But I think they know now a little bit more than they did when they first got to the Ozarks that they have some power within the town. Like, they, I mean, even though with the cartel situation making things uglier, like, the FBI at this point doesn't know that Dell is gone.
Right.
So to them, you know, Marty is still the guy who can connect all the pieces. So it's, I think I would understand from their point of view that, you know, nothing technically bad could happen to their dad while all this is still going on. But I don't think any of them are smart enough to just think about it pragmatically like that. So it is insane that they came back to
right? Like, they had an out, man. They had identities to go start some. They had money. They had all this stuff. And they're like, no, we want to be with dad. I was like, you're going to die then. For sure, one of you is going to die by the end of this series.
I mean, literally, they showed how how good the decision-making process was when the daughter tried to skip off to Chicago to go after that one-night stand.
Like, don't even get me started on that daughter. She sucks, man. So many times.
I was legitimately, like, after just the first episode, I legitimately wanted Dale to just kill her.
I never wanted to show Marty how serious he was about,
you know, him going down there and him needing to launder $8 million worth of money. I was legitimately hoping Dale would have the daughter killed because I hated her almost immediately.
And I didn't, but she even got past my my layer of acceptance because she didn't the son got into things as much as he just wanted to keep everyone safe, and he was doing his own research and, you know, was like trying to figure out what he could do within this story. And the daughter was
looking
just
like a low-key serial killer though.
Oh man, I know.
Yeah.
just Dahmer all over him. But yeah, the daughter just, while it seemed like she would accept everything, she just kept railing against the status quo, and it was like, just stop.
you just want to be like, shut up! This is real!
I know.
You know why you can't have pistachio ice cream, because we live in the middle of nowhere.
And yeah, so
it's been a while since I was 15. I'm sure I was just as erratic at that. It was probably accurate to the point it was almost too accurate. The teenager would be very self-obsessed in a situation like that and only focus on how their life is being ruined by everyone else's decisions and not the reality of it all.
Yeah, I'm kind of friends with this guy, Wyatt, and my dad's laundering money. That's what every 15-year-old
My mom chucked a possum at him.
Yeah. I hear that story at high school so many times. Sorry, Adrian.
No, that's okay. I was just thinking that even though she'd be self, you know, obsessed, it seems like when the stakes go to whole family might be shot in the head and dissolved in barrels of acid, that at least 30% of your mental capacity would go toward how is everybody else in my family right now? You know, what can I do to make things a little bit easier since we all might die at any moment?
Maybe that's the slow build. Maybe in a couple seasons she'll do something super badass and be like, yeah, she was important enough for us all to remember her name. Because right now we all clearly don't. We just remember she was annoying.
It started with a C.
Charlotte.
Ah. Ruins the name Charlotte for me.
Charlotte's Web of terrible.
So we're kind of we had some great conversation, but I want to get to this game before we wrap things up today because I'm a big fan of it. First off, this is called Marty Bird, Michael Bluth, both or neither, and you're going to answer this question based on the fact that the answer to the question is either Marty Bird, Michael Bluth, both. You get it. You guys get it. I don't spell that for you, but. So, Adrian, you're going to be at a handicap because you've only watched 5 episodes. But I think this is fair now that I think about it. Looking at the questions I got here, I think you're going to be on pretty good level with Nick here. So, let's kick things off. We got a quote. And this one is, what have we always said is the most important thing? Family. Is that Marty Bird, Michael Bluth, both, or neither?
I'm going to go with Michael Bluth.
Okay, Adrian.
I'll say Marty.
You're going to go Marty? She's always going the opposite. I swear that's her go-to strategy. Anyway, Nick gets the point. It was Michael Bluth. He saw through my deception. I tried to find a really vanilla quote. The full quote is actually, what have we always said is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
George Michael Bluth says breakfast. He says family. He goes, oh, right. I forgot we're talking about family. So that line always gets me. It makes me laugh every time. Which one owns a ship? Marty Bird, Michael Bluth, both or neither?
Wait, which one owns a what?
A ship, like a boat.
Michael Bluth?
Gonna say neither.
Gonna say neither.
I forgot that was a thing. I'm going with neither too.
Oh man. Well, man, this is a topic for debate. I wanted to say Marty Bird. because, and I kind of looked at this, because he had that boat, he took that boat out when he was going to the church, so I was like, he has to have at least access to a boat. But, yeah. I guess if we're jumping into semantics here, Michael Bluth also had access to the C word, as it was called in Arrested Development,
okay.
via Job. So if we're going in terms of loaning, yeah, I guess you guys are right, neither one owns it. But I originally did have Marty Bird, but that's fair. You both get
you
the point on that
ship.
One.
Also said ship. And I don't think he takes the ship. Yeah. He doesn't take the Lusitania.
I didn't know the difference.
The Bismarck out to
I'm not a boatsman. Getting to the semantics of boat talk here. On
boat
so you're
zark.
Not a seafaring man.
Boats go down streams. Left. This is a streaming podcast. It's all...
Yeah. Okay, we gotta move on. We just all gotta right. move on from this. Okay, the show was actually filmed... in Culver City, and not where the series was set in. Was that Michael Bluth? Was that Marty Bird? Both or neither? Their characters show, I should say.
Both.
Michael Bluth.
You say Michael Bluth?
Yeah.
Adrian gets the point. Culver City, California is where Arrested Development is filmed. Coincidentally, though, Ozark was filmed, for the most part, in Georgia. Parts of it were filmed within the actual Ozarks, but they did it in Georgia. For the most part.
Yeah.
All right, so who said this one? We're just gonna prioritize, compartmentalize, and there's going to be a little bit of time for management. Okay? Is that Marty Bird, Michael Bluth? I'm not even gonna throw in both or neither.
That would be Michael plagiarism.
Bluth. I'm going Bluth.
Marty.
Nick gets the point. It was Marty. It was in that opening talk where he's kind of putting in perspective for the wife. He's like, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to prioritize. We're going to compartmentalize. It's going to be a little bit of time management, okay? We're going to be okay. You know, that's my best Jason Bateman impression.
You've got the part.
All right. Their show has 100% fresh rating for its first season. Is this Michael Bluth, a.k.a. Arrested Development? Is this Ozark? Or both? Or neither?
I'm going Arrested Development. Bluth.
Ozark.
Going to Ozark, Arrested Development. Adrian gets the point. It is Arrested Development. Surprisingly, and this is going to blow your guys' mind,
a lot of people
only
did
has
not
a 64% critical rating for an aggregate score. Yeah, I was actually kind of shocked. I was like, I get there's maybe some divisiveness about it, but I thought by and large, I was like, I thought this was kind of in the at least 85% to like 90-ish range in terms of quality, but... I mean,
all it takes is
you gave it a good review,
apples.
Didn't you? Did you give it a good review on Cinema Blend? You did the review, did you not, Nick?
I don't think it was an official review, but
oh, you did. Just
it would have.
This is why Ozark is amazing, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can.
I thought you were
going to
say this
give
is
us,
why it doesn't
your...
get good RT because you don't do reviews.
Oh man. Okay, so let me think about this here. I gotta run through because I wasn't keeping tally of how you guys did. Let's see. Nick had that one. You both got that one. And then Adrian got that one. And then Nick got that one.
The listeners win.
It's a tie! Somehow. 3, 4... This is what I get for doing 6 questions. No, I only did 5! How was that a tie? How did you... Oh, you guys both got 1 question right.
Yeah.
Damn. I didn't think about that. I always thought if I do an odd number of questions, there would always be a decisive... winner. I didn't expect both of you to get it right.
I think
you guys are gonna have to rock.
I think we just broke the podcast.
I think because I watched all of Ozark.
I'm tapped out. I haven't got anything left. How about you're both winners? Can we just do that? Hey, everybody's
Yay!
A winner.
Whoever has seen episode 8 of Ozark wins.
Yay. Oh, that's true. Nick does get the win because he's watched the entire series. And hopefully,
Fair enough.
Adrian, now that we've spoiled the entire thing for you. Do you think you'll be inclined to go back and finish it?
Yeah. I don't really, for whatever reason, spoilers don't really deter me.
I think it comes with the territory, because we have to spoil so many things for ourselves.
Maybe so.
On a daily basis, writing articles for television. There's shows that I've thought about watching for years that I write current articles on, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna know exactly what happens there if I ever sit down and watch it. But yeah. I think you kind of just, you're like, okay, I'm fine with it.
If I can bring it back to the beginning, she didn't. Nah, yay. Yeah. That's a callback.
Okay, so we're out of time right now. Nick, I loved having you on an official episode of the show. I felt like we rushed you off last time. I actually got a listener complaint. They were like, you guys kind of shoved Nick off that podcast rather quick. I was like, I didn't know what to do.
It was my fault. I have such a shovable body, is what it is.
Adrian, of course, you keep it realer than the best of them. That's a weird compliment.
Anyway. I don't even know what to say to that. Thank
for
you.
For those of you listening, because we actually have listeners listening, believe it or not, share your thoughts on the podcast on our Now Streaming page on Facebook. We'd love some suggestions on shows we should watch, what you love, what you don't love. I mean, I would prefer just only hearing the parts you love, but yeah, constructive criticism is fine. Until then, remember, cable television is overrated, and binging is the new black.
Wow.
Yeah, look at that. That was great.
Put it on a bumper sticker.